to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hi, Susan, and hello to all of you listeners.
Most of our program this morning will be devoted to the bond issue elections tomorrow, but we're still going to start out our program, as we usually do, with a short acknowledgement of the signs of the seasons followed by the weather. What did you find in the phenology calendar for today, Ursula?
The great horned owl is something called the tiger of the night. Pat Schlarbaum, our KHOI correspondent from the Department of Natural Resources, tells us why. Let's listen to his report.
Phenology is chronicling the dates of nature's happenings. The first woodland hepatica wildflower in spring or the last osprey of autumn is noted in a journal. Today's focus on phenology are great horned owls. These are the owls commonly called hoot owls. During the depths of a long Iowa winter, there are owls that have successfully incubated eggs this time of year. According to birder Denny Thompson, a pair of great horned owls were seen feeding young at the Polk City Wildlife Refuge in central Iowa late last week. During mating season in December and January, male and female great horned owls hoot back and forth to each other. Their mating rituals include bowing to each other and rubbing bills. When ready to nest, they do not build their own nest, but instead seek out existing sites, such as last year's nests of other birds like hawks or crows. Squirrel nests, large cavities in trees, crevices in rocks, and nooks in buildings are all utilized by the owls. Because they remain largely inactive during the day, great horned owls are cryptically colored, so they blend with their surroundings while they rest. They have a rust-brown colored facial disc and white feathers on their chin and throat. Their body is a mottled gray and brown and barred on the belly. It's one of the most common owls in North and South America, equally at home in deserts, wetlands, forests, grasslands, backyards, cities, and almost any other semi-open habitat between the Arctic and the tropics. With its long ear-like tufts, intimidating yellow-eyed stare, and deep hooting voice, the great horned owl is the quintessential owl of storybooks. Great horned owls have ear tufts atop their head. These tufts are neither horns nor ears. Scientists disagree as to the function of these ear tufts. Some suggest that the ear tufts serve as camouflage by breaking the contour of the owl's head. Others suggest that the tufts serve some role in communication or recognition, enabling the owls to convey some kind of signals to one another. Experts do agree that the ear tufts play no role in hearing. One fact that is widely recognized, great horned owls are the tigers of the night skies. This powerful predator can take down birds and mammals even larger than itself, but it also dines on daintier fare such as frogs and snakes, mice, rabbits, songbirds, hawks, and even other owls. Great horned owls are the only animal that feeds on skunks with regularity. Often at night, a hint of skunk wafting on the breezes is delivered by a nearby great horned owl. They also take adult American crows and their nestlings. For this reason, American crows often mob owls and caw to them to discourage them from lingering about. Many a great horned owl location has been betrayed by the murderous calling of crows or blue jays. In the wild, great horned owls live up to 13 years, possibly twice that time in captivity. Great horned owls have few natural predators in Iowa except for man-made poisons, electric wires, or automobiles. They prefer open and secondary growth woodlands and will also live on farmsteads and suburban settings. Great horned owls grow to lengths of up to 23 inches and weigh 3.5 pounds, but this does not earn them the title of the largest of all owls. That distinction goes instead to the great gray owl, which grows to lengths of 33 inches. Great gray owls only visit Iowa during extreme northern winters and do not nest here. Great horned owls have earned the distinction of being called our tigers of the night skies. The fact that young great horned owls are hatching now will provide a tremendous predator advantage to these owls when all the other birds and mammals are producing young later in the spring and summer. A great website to learn more about Iowa birds is iowabirds.org. And that's our Focus on Phenology for today on KHOI, Heart of Iowa, Community Radio, 89.1 FM.
Weather is very important on election day, and it's pretty grim weather. I think Elwin Taylor was right. You know, he came in a couple of weeks ago and he talked about the polar incursion number 9. Very, very rare. Today is mostly sunny and cold, as you know, with a high near 9. Wind chill as low as minus 25. Calm winds becoming south, 5 to 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy, with low around 5, wind chill values as low as minus 10. South wind 7 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Tuesday, election day, mostly cloudy, with a high near 23. Wind chill values as low as minus 5. South wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. And Tuesday night, a 50% chance of snow, mainly before midnight. Cloudy with a low around 14. Wind chill values as low as 5. East, northeast wind 5 to 8 miles per hour. New snow accumulation of less than half an inch possible. Wednesday, cloudy with a high near 24.
I understand that next week it's supposed to get up around 40, though, so the end might be in sight.
Well, you've been trying to get that lion, the March lion, to get out of here in a hurry, right?
So this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and one of our greatest goals in community radio, and therefore KHOI, is to provide the venue for sincere, respectful, and thoughtful discussion on local issues. And today, my co-host, Susan Branson, and I will provide that space for discussion about the $19 million bond referendum for a new convention center and renovation of the Scheman Building at the Iowa State Center in Ames, which will be up for election tomorrow. Voting will be from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., and it'll be possible to vote at numerous centers around Ames. You can vote at any of these, and we'll read out the locations at the end of this program. And you will also be able to find a list of locations on our website at khoifm.org.
Last month, the Board of Regents approved Iowa State University's plan to pay for the other half of the project's estimated $38.8 million cost. According to the Ames Tribune, the proposal, which is being championed by the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, would raise the city's property tax rate by an estimated 5.3% over the next 20 years, or about $60 per year for the average homeowner. The bond referendum needs more than 60% of the vote to pass.
Susan, who will we be hearing from during this hour?
It's important to hear strong and thorough statements from both sides of this issue. Ann Kinsel will be speaking about her particular concern as a taxpayer and other issues that led her to oppose the proposal. Mark North, who is the manager of the Iowa State Center, will share his firsthand knowledge about the impact that the additions to the convention center will have on the operation of the facility. But first, before we get focused on the local issue, here are some general comments on convention centers from Haywood Sanders, professor of public administration at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Professor Sanders has been studying convention centers for over 20 years and has published numerous findings. I recorded this interview last week because he won't be available for a phone call today. And before we begin, I just want to mention that he has quite a lot to say about Ames in particular. Definitely, he's been following us.
Let's hear what he has to say.
I'm talking to Haywood Sanders, professor in the Department of Public Administration at the University of Texas in San Antonio, and I believe your special expertise is convention centers.
Yes, indeed. I've been looking at convention centers and their performance and the promises surrounding them
I looked at your vita this morning, and I saw that your first publication, Funding Convention Centers for Mid-Sized Communities, was 1991. That was a particularly interesting title to me because we are a mid-sized community. And what did you find in that early study that dealt with mid-sized communities?
Well, what I had found particularly intriguing was the gradual but really quite substantial shift in how convention centers were being financed, even in small and mid-sized places, that increasingly cities and local governments generally were moving away from financial mechanisms, typically general obligation bonds or debt, that depended upon voter approval, and were finding ways to finance these projects with revenue streams often tied to visitors, hotel taxes, restaurant taxes, car rental taxes, that could be used without having to ask the voters.
And was there any pushback from that? Any voters who were objecting that the city council was spending this money?
But what was happening at very much the same time was that city after city had begun to employ the rhetoric and argument of economic impact, that these projects were bound to yield a flood of new visitors from out of town to the community, and those visitors would in turn spend hundreds of dollars a day each and produce millions of dollars in new spending and economic impact, thereby creating jobs and increasing development in these cities. And so almost in parallel with the political thrust of not putting these things on the ballot and giving the local voters the opportunity to choose, was this kind of grand rhetoric of economic promise and improvement that has proven for some time the kind of magic set of ingredients for selling convention centers. And the result is we've seen over the last 20 years, and in particular in the last 10, an enormous boom in convention center building from one end of a country to the other.
Well, of course, you probably didn't have a lot of data in 1991, but I see that by 2002, when you wrote Convention Myths and Markets, Review of Convention Center Feasibility Studies. Now, of course, you were looking at the feasibility studies themselves, not the follow-up. Is that right?
Well, in that particular article, I was focused on the kinds of analysis and arguments the consultants were making in some complementary work and work that I've been doing in the years since that article was published. I've made a pretty systematic effort to look at the consultant studies that were done when these projects were first discussed and approved in the community, and then, you know, what happened after? Did the convention center end up producing the kinds of visitor activity and attendance that the consultants were promising?
Did you find any that were success stories, where they really did what they said they were going to do?
It's very tough to find success stories, but it's remarkably easy to find a great many cases where things didn't even come close. Now, I can't raise my hand and swear there is absolutely no convention center project in the U.S. that has managed to meet or beat its forecasts. But what I have seen over and over are really dramatic differences between what was supposed to happen and what ended up happening. Let me give you one example. That's in Atlanta, now home to the fourth largest convention center in the country. They had a study in October of 1996, actually I have my hands on a copy right now, done by Price Waterhouse, that said a major expansion of their convention center would yield them convention attendance of 1.4 to 1.5 million a year. And they carried out that expansion. They finished it off in 2002, added about 50% more space to their convention center. At the time that study was done, they were doing about, in 1995, about 879,000 convention attendees. Last year, in fiscal year 2013, they saw exactly 471,244 folks at conventions and trade shows there. 471,000, by my count, is a whole lot less than 1.4 to 1.5 million. And that kind of track record, that you get a third of the business that the consultants forecast, is far from uncommon. And in fact, it's the norm. It happened in Boston. It's happened in Chicago. It's happened in cities from one end of the country to the other. The situation, in many ways, makes sense, looked at in a kind of longer-term historical context, if the same consultants are telling Atlanta and San Diego and Boston and New York that each and every one of them, if they build a new or expanded convention center, will see more business. And a large fraction of those cities do just that. They spend the money, they build the new space. You end up with a whole lot more space than you have convention center demand. And that's exactly where we are today. Even the industry itself, the Center for Exhibition Industry Research, which is financed by event planners and exhibitors and the companies that serve them, has described this market as overbuilt with a supply of convention center space that exceeds demand. So for me, that's pretty much the telling reality that any city, including AIM, faces in today's market environment. There are a whole lot of places that have decided that they are special and unique and bound to succeed, and the likelihood is most of them won't. All too often, you're doing it with proponents who say all these wonderful things will happen in the future, with very little sense of how likely that is. So for me, what makes sense at this juncture in a place like Ames is to call for a little bit of civic time out and say, at the very least, we need to ask some larger questions. Questions about the market for convention center space. Questions about what's going on in the rest of the state of Iowa, where a whole host of cities, Cedar Rapids, Coralville, Des Moines, for example, have either recently expanded their convention centers or built new ones, or are contemplating doing just what Ames is doing. And ask the question, does this make sense? Is this the best, most appropriate thing for us to spend our public dollars on? And if folks come to the conclusion that a convention center will be great, that's fine. I certainly wouldn't object. But at the very least, those broader, larger questions need to be asked, and they need to be asked with a very clear understanding of how competitive and difficult the convention center market is. There's a reason that convention centers run at an operating loss. A big part of the reason is centers from one end of this country to the other are giving away their space for free in an effort to lure groups to their community. That's what happens when you've overbuilt the market. And if groups are coming and they're not paying to rent the space, then you're going to be subsidizing them with one tax source or another. Is the kind of spending on the order of $19 or $20 million for construction that's being anticipated here the single most important public investment and borrowing priority in the minds of Ames taxpayers? Is this the best thing you can do with a spare $19 million? I put the question in those terms because all too often in the cities that I've looked at, the discussion about these convention center projects is not a very broad one about where are we going as a community? What are our goals? What's our strategy? Where should we be spending our money, our public dollars, to improve this community in a particular kind of way that makes sense for us? Instead, the discussion tends to be a remarkably narrow one. Should we build a convention center or not? And by limiting the discussion to that very narrow, immediate question, you're totally eliminating the whole range of potential choices that a community has. You also have an opportunity, which not every city has. You have the opportunity for the public to make this choice and to make this choice at the ballot box. And so folks need to be informed, and they need to understand the kinds of dollars that are at issue and the kind of options they may face.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Susan Franson, and we're taking a last look at the $19 million bond referendum for a new convention center and renovation of the Scheman Building at the Iowa State Center in Ames, which is up for election tomorrow. Voting will be from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at numerous voting centers in Ames, and you can vote at any of them. We'll read out the locations at the end of this program, and you will also be able to find a list of the locations on our website at khoifm.org. As always, our goal at KHOI is to air a number of points of view and to allow you, the listener, to draw your own conclusions. We just heard an interview with Mr. Hayward Sanders, who is a professor of public administration at the University of Texas in San Antonio, who has been studying convention centers for over 20 years.
Sanders points out how fortunate we are to live in a community where such measures come to the voters. Apparently, that's exceptional. I know from the experience of living in this community that Ames voters are thoughtful, and this city has benefited from their thoughtfulness. It's just that voters need to have as much information as possible, and that's what we're trying to provide. Ursula, before we speak with Mark North and Ann Kinsel, would you read what will be in the bond referendum on the ballot tomorrow so that it is clear to everyone what's being asked?
This is the language of the bond issue. Shall the City of Ames in Story County, Iowa, issue its bonds in an amount not exceeding $19 million for the purpose of paying one-half of the cost of constructing a multi-use convention facility located at the Iowa State University Center to be jointly owned by the City and Iowa State University and of renovating the Iowa State University Scheman Building?
Ann Kinsel is here with us, speaking from the point of view of a local resident and taxpayer. Ann, please give us a short opening statement so we can be sure we can hear your central ideas on the bond issue before we discuss anything else you may be thinking about on this issue.
Hi, Ann, and welcome to KHOI.
Thank you, Ursula and Susan. It's a lovely morning, a bit nippy, but very nice. I've been following the saga of the proposed new addition and remodeling at the Iowa State Center since I was first invited by Matthew Goodman to an early question and answer session in 2012. At that time, I had the opportunity to learn more about what was going on or what was proposed. And then later, I attended a session last fall sponsored by the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. During these presentations, I always seem to have more questions than answers. There was a strong sense from the proponents that this new flat space is a good idea because this is what Ames needs. Well, the question of needs and wants is always a good one. I found myself having doubts right from the get-go. My vote for the project was never solid. First, the flood issue. Knowing what we know about the vulnerability of this site, is it wise to make a significant public investment at this location? Second, is the university contributing enough to the project versus Ames's property owners, both commercial and residential? Third, if the renderings that have been circulated are accurate, is a big dark building what we want at Lincoln Way and Beach? There are already, in my opinion, far too few interesting visual links from Lincoln Way to the campus, and the renderings suggest a lost design opportunity. Fourth, what about the operating loss? How will this really be funded over time? Having seen the arguments pro and con in the paper and the statement at the Visitors Bureau, I still haven't totally sorted that out. Fifth, the university has allowed the Scheman Building to deteriorate to an embarrassing level. Well, do we have proper assurances that the university will make an abrupt about-face and ensure it is a public investment that will be adequately maintained? Then there was the killer question for me. Is this the best expenditure of new taxes? Kind of following what the professor said earlier. Are there competing interests in our community that would be better served with these public dollars if we chose to raise them? An additional question, and one that comes up often when I think of new Ames initiatives, is how does this fit into the existing community? The built environment of a community is a very complex puzzle, and piecemeal projects that appear to drop in a location without solid examination have how this new part affects the whole always give me concern. But ultimately, my doubts have fused into this, and this is why I will be voting no. I think that the Iowa State Center is a university building. It's a set of university buildings. They serve primarily university functions. I think it's the role of Iowa, state of Iowa taxpayers, to fund university operations, supplemented by the occasional donor. It is simply not, in my view, the proper role of Ames commercial and residential property owners in paying their property tax to directly fund what I view as university operations. We can call this a convention center all we want, but it really is an extension of Iowa State University. Ames taxpayers would be asked to pay on both ends of the deal. They're part of the 3 million folks who live in Iowa and help fund our great public universities. We would also be asked to fund it directly as City of Ames residents. In my view, this is simply not appropriate. Where would this argument end? We're talking about a new dorm on Lincoln Way by Buchanan Hall. These kids who will be living in the dorm, these students will be living and spending money and funding jobs, essentially, in Ames. Are we to contribute towards the cost of this or to the cost of the next building on campus? This is simply not our role as Ames taxpayers. I think that Ames taxpayers get extraordinary benefits from having a university. Nobody in their right mind could doubt that. But at the same time, we carry a lot of financial water for the university. The university is our largest employer. To the extent that children of university employees attend our schools, someone else makes up for the commercial property taxes that the university, as a multi-billion-dollar enterprise, simply does not pay. That means I don't think that the university should pay property taxes. That's not its proper role. But at the same time, citizens of Ames get a lot from the university, and they contribute a lot to the university. My bottom line is, this is a university project, should be funded by Iowa taxpayers. The Board of Regents, the duly elected representatives, should be making that decision as to whether this project should go forward or not.
Thank you. This is Ann Kinzel, Ames area resident, speaking about the bond issue that's on the table for tomorrow. Ann, one of the things you mentioned was what is the best expenditure of new taxes and competing interests in our community. Can you give us a sense of what other competing interests that you think might be worthy of consideration?
You know, we recently funded a public library by raising our taxes. I think the library is useful to a lot of people in our community. So when I look at tax dollars, I look at who can benefit from the use of that common expenditure. Certainly things like a community health recreation center, a pool, an expanded park system, even the need to fund greater access to preschool and full pre-K for children in our community. We also, there's no doubt that in Ames we need greater affordable housing. This was a huge topic in last fall's city council race. These are things that tax dollars can help fund, not entirely fund perhaps, but help. So for me, those are the kind of the competing interests that look to the larger segment of the community.
And one of the points that the Convention and Visitors Bureau has made is that the space that will be built will also be used as community space. You don't find that argument convincing?
Well, I think it's a small amount of space given the whole. And I think that the expanded library is providing new community space in Ames. I think if the university was really interested in community space, I'm sure that there could be found some places on the existing campus that could be shared with the community. I also think that it's certain that Ames residents and Story County residents, Central Iowans, will use this space. But I think that they should pay for it on the same rental basis as any other user, not as an owner or funder or provider of capital for expanding the buildings.
Well, thank you. And you've given a pretty good summary of the reasons stated in letters to the editor and various questions that have been raised at the forum of the League of Women Voters. Okay, thanks for coming in, and come again sometime. And
thank you. I just want to say I think it's great to have KHOI radio in the community as other, perhaps, print medias diminish amongst our midst. It's wonderful to have the addition of community radio, and I hope all residents of Ames realize that and will support the station.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We're taking a last look at the $19 million bond referendum for a new convention center and the renovation of Scheman Building at the Iowa State Center in Ames, which will be up for election tomorrow. Voting will occur from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. We are your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Susan Franson, and we just heard from Ames resident Ann Kinzel, who plans to vote in opposition to the proposed bond.
Mark North, General Manager of the Iowa State Center, is with us now. Welcome, Mark.
Well, good morning, and thank you.
We are very glad to have you with us. We appreciate your sharing with us and the listeners your firsthand understanding of operations at the Scheman Center as a conference and convention center. You can inform us about how Iowa State Center has changed since 1975 when the Scheman Building was constructed to complement the other buildings in the center. Mark, please tell us briefly what you see as the most important things voters should consider when they go to the polls tomorrow.
Well, I think, first of all, that people really need to understand how the conference industry has changed in the state of Iowa since the Scheman Building was constructed in 1975. It was originally constructed as a continuing education building. It actually had a telephone repair section in the building where telephone people would come and learn how to repair telephones. That's, you know, long gone since then. But, you know, over time, you know, clients' needs have changed. Attendance numbers grew. They have added exhibitors to help pay for the conferences. They've added meal functions, receptions. And, you know, as those things changed back in the 1980s, the ACVB, Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, was formed by three partners at the time and was originally housed in the Scheman Building. And their task at that time was to go out and seek additional business to come to the city of Ames and use our facilities. So once that started, then Hilton started being used in very creative ways. We started doing banquets on the main floor. We started doing trade show exhibit booths on the main floor, up on the concourse. Just a whole host of different functions were being done in there. And all that was really due to the cooperation of the hospitality industry partners in Ames. It's something that many, many communities are just so envious of in Ames. The cooperation between the city of Ames, the hotels, the university, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and you know, people who are involved in associations that bring activity to town. It's just phenomenal. I mean, we go to other towns and talk about the things we do, and they just look at us with envy in their eyes. So, you know, it's something to be very, very proud of. And, you know, our service is, again, outstanding. You know, we like to have people come to Ames. And people understand that, and they appreciate that. And, you know, up until 1985, things, you know, were sailing along, not a lot of problems. And then Des Moines built its first convention center downtown. And I guess, unfortunately for them, it was underbuilt, I think, and not constructed well. It was multi-level and kind of a maze to get through at times if you had ever gone to an event down there. You know, so that had a little impact, but not much. And then in the year 2000, when the Vision Iowa program was approved by the state legislature, which, you know, multiplied local funding, there was a boom of construction throughout the state of Iowa between theaters, convention centers, community rec centers, all sorts of structures were going up. And in Des Moines, the Iowa Event Center was constructed, and at that point, you know, we started seeing a loss of business because people who attend conferences were expecting what they were seeing in larger communities, being able to eat, see trade shows, go to meetings and everything under one roof. That was something we couldn't do because we had to use Hilton as our basically convention center, so people had to walk across Hilton in heat, rain, snow, you know, the typical Midwestern weather. And, you know, we started slowly losing business. We did plateau about 2005. And then we plateaued around the 120,000, 130,000 person level. And then the recession in 2008 hit. We bottomed out in 2009. I think we had 70,000 visitors in total at the Scheman Building. But since then, we've been climbing back up. And I think, if my number is correct, at the end of fiscal year 2013, we'd climb back up to 114,000. And, you know, at our peak, we were at 230,000 visitors annually. So we had a very good convention center machine going here in the city of Ames. We still do.
What do you attribute to the increase again?
Well, I think when people come to our buildings, they just feel that welcoming presence. I mean, we're actually happy to see them come into the building. We work with them very well. We're very creative in what we can do with the space that we have. I mean, as an example, 2 weeks ago, the Soybean Association had their annual on-farm network. It was on Wednesday and Thursday. And, of course, Thursday, the university closed at 12:40. So we went and talked with the event coordinator, and we assured them that even though the university was closing, we would keep personnel in the building necessary to keep their event running until the end of the day, and they were very appreciative of it, made an announcement at lunch. Some people attending the conference did choose to leave, but the vast majority stayed. You know, that's just the kind of thing that helps us stay on top.
Yeah, I noticed the parking lot was... Never saw so many pickup trucks in my life.
Well, you know, we do a lot of ag conferences, and ag people use pickup trucks.
So why do you feel that this renovation and this bond issue should succeed?
Well, I have a personal stake in it, obviously, but I think, number one, it will just help serve not only out-of-town visitors more efficiently and better, but it will also serve the needs of the community. We have a lot of receptions, business meetings that we often cannot host because we just don't have the space. And if other spaces in town are booked, people are basically out of luck. I mean, recently we've had Dan Foss, the ISU Daily, IRIS 20th anniversary planning meeting, daily we end up turning business away because we just don't have the space. Now, if we had the additional space, which is divisible, we could, maybe push them into that if it's not being used, or if that's being used, then that maybe frees up some other classroom space throughout the building.
Can you break down exactly for us what it really means, the difference between the facility now and what would happen if this renovation went through?
Well, I think that history will show that a lot of the business that we do have is bursting at the seams. The Soybean Conference is an example. Shade Tree Short Course last week. The career fairs. Allstate Music, Allstate Speech, they're doing events outside of our facilities because we just don't have the space. And if we don't make some effort to improve the space, expand it, they're going to have to look elsewhere just because they can't do the activities that they need to service the students, their vendors, the Iowa Music Education Association, continuing education programs that they do during Allstate Speech. I think it will also add a lot of part-time jobs. A lot was made of the $18,000 a year salary that, was being projected. But in this community, that's not probably a bad thing. We've got 35,000 students next year. There was a recent study of students, and 56% of them work part-time. And when they become seniors, about 73% of them are working part-time. Off-campus jobs do pay more, but two-thirds of those probably do work on campus. 22% work off-campus in Story County. Another 9% work off-campus outside of Story County. So, having these additional on-campus jobs is a great thing. And, being a private management company, we can also hire non-students as well. And we have, a number of non-traditional employees. And, we could also have paid internships with the Hotel, Restaurant, and Institutional Management College. And I think the benefits there are just fantastic.
I know this sounds like a stupid question, but when you say there's not enough space, can you help us visualize what you're talking about? Are you saying that Hilton is not available anymore?
It's available, but people are just used to going and attending their conference and trade shows and meeting under one roof and not on, on different levels. For instance, the last two major conferences, Shade Tree and the Soybean Conference, the lobbies were just packed full of exhibitors. I came to work one morning, came up out of the stairwell. There was a gentleman on his cell phone telling, I'm assuming his wife, yeah, I made it, but it's crowded. You know, so when you have lobbies and you've got trade shows on two different lobbies, it doesn't make the exhibitors happy, so they don't have a good experience. And when you have these large open spaces, you can set everybody up in one area. It's easily accessed, and that frees up lobbies for, you know, just the mingling and the person-to-person contact and the classrooms for, you know, the educational sessions. Because sometimes we have to take up classrooms just to store the exhibitors' shipping materials.
I have a question about the competition. Haywood Sanders talked about the overbuilding in this industry, and I know that there are 10 other cities that have built convention centers since 2000. Of course, ours was already 25 years old then. So obviously these are newer, more modern. But which ones of these would be the size to be in competition with us?
The size that we have zeroed in on to build is, it's kind of in between a lot of different places. I mean, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, they're a lot larger. Coralville is about the same size. The advantage that we have, as you just said, is we've been in the business. We've got a client list. We've got clients who, when they left, were not happy to leave. They love coming to Ames. The thing that we have that other people don't have is this cooperative advantage with Iowa State University. And because of Iowa State University, a lot of people want to come here. You know, you've got the educational resources. Ames is a safe community. You know, for youth events, you don't have people running all over the skywalks in Des Moines. I'm not putting down the skywalks, but you know what I mean. So I think it just gives us the ability to go back after those people that we have lost and, you know, see if we can't bring them back. You know, nothing is guaranteed.
So you're saying that you believe that if we had a state-of-the-art facility, we would be competitive?
Oh, definitely. Very definitely. And, you know, there's things we can't bid on. You know, the League of Cities annual conference, which goes, you know, around the state of Iowa from city to city, we don't have the space. We can't do it. The last time I think we did it, was on the floor of Hilton, and we hung a curtain, and the one side was booths and things, and we did a banquet on the other side, but it was crowded. You know, there's no restrooms on the main floor, so for restrooms you got to, you know, climb up. It's just not a very good situation, and it doesn't provide a good experience for the attendees.
So assuming that you want to make Sheman into a real convention space, which you're saying in a way it wasn't built to be, assuming we would want that, on a scale of 1 to 10, how lacking from the operations point of view is it right now?
Probably a 9.
In terms of lack.
Right.
So it's definitely not working as a convention space.
No, it's not. We are forcing it to work as a convention space. But, you know, I wish I could show you picture. I should have brought some pictures and showed you, but
it's always good to show pictures on the radio.
Yeah.
Well, can you paint a picture for us?
Well, I mean, as an example, the Shade Tree Short Course. There's a lot of landscaping firms that come to that conference. I mean, they're bringing in small trees, shrubs, ground cover, landscaping bricks and blocks. They're bringing it up 40-year-old freight elevators on hand trucks and rolling it down service corridors through carpeting to their booth. And, you know, if in the new space, there's a loading dock door on the west side, you open up the door, they back their trucks right in into the exhibit floor, roll their products in, get their booth set up, they're back out. And, I mean, it's just a much more efficient operation for them. For the staff, trying to get things changed around because of layouts of service corridors and the rooms, you try to do it when they're in session. But sometimes you can't, and you have to, do these things when they're out and about, and it becomes quite difficult.
Before we're out of time, I have a financial question that has puzzled me, has been bothering me, because I know you've mentioned Sheman badly needs to be renovated, and this is part of the package that mm-hmm. we would be voting on. But I read on a website, one of the websites by the ACVB, that the cost for renovating Sheman would be $6 million out of this $38.8 million, and then the rest would be for the new space, which is obviously going to be very expensive, but it would be 35,000 additional feet, right?
Well, 35,000 usable square feet.
Usable square feet,
yeah,
yes.
The gross square footage is about 120,000 square feet.
Of addition.
Correct.
Well, that's what confused me from the beginning. They talked about all this space, and then they shrank it down to 35,000.
What you're seeing in those drawings that have been circulated, that's just basically a placeholder.
Mm-hmm.
We met with the architect, a lot of our clients, and our staff on what's needed for square footage to make a building operate. So in that 120,000 square feet, there's a pre-function space, which is going to be between the existing Sheman building and the exhibit space. There's going to be a kitchen area and storage area on the west end. There's going to be a service corridor in the building somewhere. There will be additional classrooms, meeting space down on ground floor that will be constructed, some restrooms. So all of that will add up to the total gross of about 120,000 square feet, 35,000 of which is going to be saleable.
And this is in addition to the original Sheman building?
Correct.
And what is the square footage of the original Sheman
building? It's about 128,000 square feet. Yeah, they're about equal.
Well, ultimately, you're going to have to answer to the taxpayers here in Ames who are voting on this. Why is this a benefit to the taxpayers? I think that was one of Ann's concerns, was how does this, okay, say we do succeed in having a convention center in Ames. What is the benefit to Ames residents since they're being asked to invest in this?
Well, I think one of the foremost benefits is just there's more availability to use the building. We do proms. We do wedding receptions. As I mentioned earlier, we have businesses in town who will call to hold meetings for their employees and their clients. People with ties to Ames, Iowa State, we probably turn away a dozen wedding receptions a year. Now, do those end up somewhere else in town? We don't track that, but maybe, maybe not.
What is the financial benefit to residents to have an active convention
center?
Well,
when there's an active convention center, people are spending money, and we can argue until the cows come home on what that is. But people who do come to Ames do spend money. One of the conferences we lost, the Iowa Methodist Church Conference, which was here every June, and I know there's a shoe store downtown here. They did a booming business when the Methodists were in town, and he'll tell you that. Midwest Energy, they started in Ames 80 plus years ago. I think they started at the Sheldon Munn. They grew, went to the Memorial Union, and they came to us. And they're now up in Rochester, Minnesota, after 80-some years. So when people do come to town, they do spend money. They are contributing to the local economy. There are local option sales tax benefits from that. And it just, a lot of times the Iowa State Center is the one and only time people will experience Ames. So as, basically a gateway to the community, having up-to-date, modern convention facilities, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm. And one final question was raised by Ann Kinzel, and I've heard actually from a number of people. People are rightfully proud of the way Iowa State Center looks. It was built by Mr. McConnell, I think, and very beautiful architecture. There's fears that a convention center will break up the beauty of the center. And so my question is, what kind of attention will be spent to the architecture?
Well, there will be a lot of time spent on that. Warren Madden addressed the question a little bit in the forum last week. in our preliminary meetings with the architect that we had hired, we just needed to get a sense of the order of magnitude of the cost of the project. So, you know, this box picture that you're that has been seen by people and they've decided that's what it's going to look like is not the case. It's just a placeholder. Once the referendum passes and an architectural firm is actually hired to do the design, then the university will ultimately supervise the project. The architect will have to, you know, follow all of their requirements and codes and along with state codes. So, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done on what the building would actually look like, you know, where are the windows, you know, those kinds of things.
Is it your impression that an artful approach is a priority for the university?
I think a sustainable approach is essential for the university. You know, utilities keep getting more expensive, you know, and we have harsh winters like this, and the cost of utilities goes up. I want to tell you what C.Y. Stevens cost me the month of December.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. We really appreciate your being here, and I know I have learned so much that I never guessed about the Iowa State Center, and I've watched it from 1975. So,
yeah, I started working there in 1975 as a student, putting myself through college. So,
so you really have a feeling for those student interns.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I do. It's a good thing.
Thank you so much, and please come back
one way or the other. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been talking about the vote tomorrow to bond issues on an amount not exceeding $19 million for the purpose of paying one half the cost of constructing a multi-use convention facility located at the Iowa State Center to be jointly owned by the city and Iowa State University and the renovation of Iowa State University's Scheman Building.
You may be hearing some of the last words on the topic before tomorrow, but the last word really comes tomorrow, March 4th, when the residents of Ames speak by using the power of the ballot. If you are an Ames resident, remember to get out and vote. This is an important issue and a rare opportunity for you to decide on a major change in the way our town looks and what visitors we'll have.
Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at 7 voting centers throughout Ames, and you can vote at any of these, whatever is the most convenient for you. The locations are the State Forest Nursery at 2404 South Duff Avenue, University Baptist Church, 2400 Mortenson Parkway, Heartland Baptist Church, 3504 Grand Avenue, Bethesda Lutheran Church, 1517 Northwestern Avenue, Ascension Lutheran Church, 2400 Bloomington Road, Collegiate United Methodist Church, 2622 Lincoln Way, the Vote Center 7, Trinity Christian Reformed Church at 3626 Ontario Street. We hope this program has been helpful to you in thinking about this issue, and please remember to get out and voice your opinion.
Our guests today have been Haywood Sanders, Professor of Public Administration at the University of Texas in San Antonio, Ann Kinsel, citizen of Ames, and Mark North, manager of the Iowa State Center.
Your hosts today have been us, Susan Franson and Ursula Rudenberg. Our engineer is Richard Morrison, and the music you heard included the Winter Solstice and Piscean Dance by Ralph Towner from his CD Winter Solstice. Our theme song is Backtrack and by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also hear this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you will find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carlson, can get the information. Today's will include all those voting sites.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHO possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.